the Potomac, he left A.P. Hill's corps on Marye's Heights to keep an eye on the Federals, who were still camped near the Rappahannock River. Hill's presence might convince the Union commanders that the rebels were just sitting still, which could give the rest of Lee's army a considerable head start on his march northward. But such secrecy was not to be. For most of the war, Confederate cavalry had far outclassed its opponents, the Union commanders seemingly uninterested in using their horsemen for much more than guarding supply trains. Thus, it was an unexpected tactic from the Federal command when a large force of cavalry probed Lee's positions north and west of Fredericksburg to verify the rumors that Lee was marching northward yet again. The order came from Joe Hooker, one of his final and most effective decisions made as commander of the Army of the Potomac. The irony, of course, is that if Hooker had used a significant cavalry screen to probe for Lee's position before and during the Battle of Chancellorsville, it is unlikely that Jackson's surprise flank attack would have been a surprise at all. On June 9, 1863, the Federal cavalry, under Alfred Pleasonton, surprised his nemesis Jeb Stuart at what became known as the Battle of Brandy Station, the largest cavalry engagement of the entire war. The result was essentially a draw, but the Confederate horsemen absorbed twice as many losses. The fact that his cavalry had been caught so completely unaware was a serious embarrassment to Stuart, who had made much of his reputation as the most celebrated horseman in either army. Though the battle seriously wounded Stuart's pride, the fight gave Joe Hooker something much more valuable: concrete information that the bulk of Lee's army was well away from Fredericksburg and was moving north. Though Hooker still favored a quick march southward toward Richmond, he couldn't simply ignore Lee's army. In Washington, it was obvious that the sudden change in Confederate strategy meant that Lee's forces could pose a significant threat to the capital. Hooker conceded that Richmond would have to wait. Throughout mid-June, as Lee marched his army toward Maryland, Hooker gave his final orders as commander and began to shift his army so as to protect a nervous Washington, D.C. The vanguard of Lee's army crossed the Potomac River on June 15th, and soon the rest of the Army of Northern Virginia gathered near Hagerstown, Maryland. Once again, their movements were screened by South Mountain, and once again, they had their eyes focused on a march into Pennsylvania. The end came for Hooker on June 27th. With Lee renewing his threat to northern cities, Washington would not rely on a man who had shown no backbone for a serious confrontation. Among ranking Union officers, the consensus favored Major General John Reynolds to be Hooker's successor. Despite Reynolds' clear-cut qualifications for the job, he was viewed by official Washington as a man with political ambition, who might use the position to speak out against Lincoln's policies, a charge that few in the Army took seriously. Despite the Army's support of Reynolds, the choice more amenable to Washington was the distinctly apolitical George Meade. Meade was a chronically short-tempered man, quick with a sharp tongue, and though he was respected by his troops, he was not especially well-liked by many of his new subordinates. Meade himself was surprised by the appointment and was not overly eager to accept the new assignment. He agreed with some of the men around him that there were others better qualified for the job, but Meade also knew his duty, so with a possible crisis looming, he quickly accepted the responsibility. Unlike Burnside, who sought out less challenging options, Meade could not afford the luxury of time. He had no choice but to protect the capital, while at the same time he had to make every effort to figure out just what Lee was up to. With uncharacteristic speed, the Federal Army matched Lee's northward march, Meade keeping the Federal forces between South Mountain and Washington. Lee had every reason for optimism. Jefferson Davis shared his belief that another hard push into Pennsylvania would accomplish a great deal toward ending the war. Once again, Lee could feed his army from the unspoiled farmlands of the Cumberland Valley, and if he could push his men to the Susquehanna River, that valley would lie open to him as well. His options would increase every mile he marched into Pennsylvania, and he could create panic in the minds of the U.S. Congress, the fear that even if Lee bypassed the capital, he might lay waste to Harrisburg, Baltimore, or even Philadelphia. If there was to be a great last-ditch battle to save the Union, there could be bloody devastation not only in the fields,